Thank you. Mies der registriert. And we come here also to this important meeting and inform you that your presence here is highly appreciated. We will always want to work with you all, both from yourself and ourselves within the land. And I'm just going to be to.
Honorable members of the committee, I will be giving up some of the presentations. I'd like to admit that it's important that the committee is aware. My apologies, Chair. I hope it's now better. Madam Chair, honourable members of the committee, before I start, let me just give a very brief background so that you understand where I come from and have an understanding of my position. I only received the submissions late last night, so I went through them. But I must admit that some of those submissions I did not have time to pay proper attention to and to prepare for this meeting. So please, Madam Chair, if I omit something and I leave something out, please bear that in mind. The second point is that as far as the police service is concerned, we went through it, and I will not focus on the aspects relating to DNA, because a number of really detailed and technical submissions were received, but in view of what you just said, I will omit those and not deal with them in detail, and only deal with those submissions where I found reference to fingerprints themselves. The first submission, Madam Chair, deals or was received from the Medical Rights Advocacy Network, MERAN. And apart from their detailed analysis of DNA, and the issues surrounding that, they also raised one issue, and they said there is an ethical issue relating to fingerprints. And that ethical issue is the issue that apparently the bill as it stands, and I believe they are correct, permits the use of reasonable force in order to take the fingerprint of a person or the blood sample of a person. Now, exactly. The same applies as far as blood samples are concerned than as far as fingerprints are concerned. And this is an issue that obviously needs to be addressed by this committee in the bill. They raise the issue especially in the light of the blood sample by saying that it actually violates the relationship between the medical practitioner and the medical practitioner's patient. They believe that it's unethical for that person to use force in order to take a blood sample. From our view, from the police's side, Madam Chair, we believe that in terms of the Constitution is very clear that a person has the right not to testify against himself. So an accused person in court cannot be forced to testify. And that's very important. However, the courts have held in the past, the High Court has held in the past, that when we look at the bodily features of a person, to take those bodily features or to take whatever is necessary to establish the bodily features of a person cannot be regarded as testimony. It is evidence, but it is not testimony. So therefore, this is not a matter of the person testifying against himself. This is a matter of real evidence. In other words, the court is provided with information to establish the truth, to determine whether the body of a certain person shows certain marks, etc. So, from the police's side, we disagree with that. We believe that it is essential that the court be provided with this information. The second submission came from the Society of Human Genetics, but they only refer to the DNA testing. So I'm not going to deal with it at all.
Sorry, Chair, if I might be allowed just to add on to what Dr. Kaufman has just mentioned here. I think from our side, it should also be borne in mind that we will be evaluating the bill in terms of what is new, what is being proposed, how the law is being changed. Now, that issue is part of the law as it exists. It's not being affected by this bill. We've already got court precedent on to what extent may a person be forced to get a blood sample, to what extent may fingerprints, but nothing in this bill affects the legal position as it stands presently. So I thought I'd just make that clear, Chair.
Thank you, Chief. I just want to confirm that the bill as it is now, the redrafted bill, focuses on the status quo of what we have not considered longer as is, and we've retained the status quo. And with regard to the legal practitioners, we've extended the protection to the person with non-intimate samples of that level. So we've just borne in mind that particular protection as well. And as Mr. Lala also said, it basically just confirms the position as it is in law with regard to protection and what you can do as far as the Constitution.
Remember, I know members will be here, but if you were to refer a matter of faith as a potential of reflection, the clause you're talking to, which will be easy for members, they are referring to this clause of this bill so that they were can hold it and then.
So just for clarity, they're still referring in this draft of this bill to intimate and non-intimate samples, which is not fingerprints. So I'm not sure, you know, how, if we're only getting the fingerprint aspect, why that being referred.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, thank you. The reference is still in the bill to intimate and non-intimate samples. So that still exists in the book.
Maybe I can just say as well, that was one of the questions that we would from our side have liked, or well, many of them before saw that we should take this up in the deliberation stage. At present, the Prison Criminal Procedure Act makes provision for the taking of blood samples. And let me just find it. In the new bill, or in the redraft, we would be looking at page 11, thereabouts, page 37. Page 11, that's sub 2. Any medical officer, etc., may take, including the taking of the blood. And you say that, you see that the proposal there is to change the blood sample to an intimate or non-intimate sample. And for that purpose, there was a definition of intimate and non-intimate samples inserted. But my understanding has always been that the need for that differentiation was because we wanted to deal with DNA. And what we needed to create here is a provision where the police officer, who is not a medical practitioner or nurse or whatever, can also take a sample. And for that purpose, it was needed to create the non-intimate sample. That would be the swipe, the swab that you just take, or that I think is a finger prick. So that's why, as I understood it, that differentiation was created. But in this instance, probably, if we're not dealing with DNA, I wanted to raise the purpose of leaving it, of creating that distinction. Obviously, when we return to the consideration of the DNA aspect, it will become relevant again.
The way they are questioning the issue of the local as well as the fingerprint, I mean the blood fingerprint as a non-intimate sample, they should probably should be moved to an intimate sample. so that it becomes a responsibility of the health professional vis-à-vis the employee. And I should think we might have to have an engagement there, and I think at that stage we can then decide as to whether we do away with the non-intimate and intimate services.
I think it is, at this stage it's just noteworthy to take note of this is something that's going to come up later in the deliberations.
Thank you, ma'am. Then, Chair, there was a submission by the Law Society. Well, another submission from a lady by the name of Babs, but that only dealt with DNA, so I will leave that out completely. And then the Law Society also made a submission and raised certain concerns concerning police training and the possibility that any sample, once again taken, may be contaminated because of police inability to deal with it because of their lack of training. That was an issue raised there. Obviously, this once again relates to the different samples, and we said that we will not be discussing it. Then DNA consultants made a submission, and I went through it very carefully, and there was no reference to anything different. And then the Center for Constitutional Rights made a submission, and they once again also raised the issue of the finger prick and the buccal swab, and said it should be intimate samples. We will not be dealing with that. And then they raised an issue surrounding the whole issue of a speculative search. Now, Madam Chair, the South African Dentists Association also raised that issue. And I must admit that having read through the submissions, it's clear that the term speculative search is creating confusion in the minds of people, because it creates the impression that we are talking about something that we don't know, so we take a chance, so to speak. And I understand the misunderstanding, and therefore, Chair, from the side of the police, we would like to recommend that the name of speculative search actually be changed. And our recommendation, if you will permit me to make that, Madam Chair, is to either refer to a matching search or a comparative search to compare it against the samples in the database. So either a comparative or a matching search. The
The gentleman was doing it very well, but the last, when he was talking about the submission of the Law Society, it's in all others. He gives the submission and then says, this is the recommendation, and says, this is the view and the of the police. But on this one of the Law Society, he did not say what is the view of the police. When the Law Society says the police are not trained, and also that the police cannot be said to sentence, that there will be bias and all those things. He did not say, like he's saying even now in this last message, this is the view of the police.
Thank you, madam. Yes, that's true. I did not say anything about it because the contamination aspect raised by the Law Society basically relates to DNA samples. So as far as police training is concerned, that is a concern that they raise, and it's a concern which is raised by a number of the people who made submissions, and it's a real concern, obviously, and the police is also of the opinion that in order to implement this legislation, especially when it comes to the DNA part of it, which is not yet before the committee, will require very, very specialized training. As far as fingerprint taking is concerned, all our members are trained from day one to take fingerprints. And therefore, the taking of fingerprints is not a serious issue. What they do raise, some of the people who made submissions, is the issue that police do not deal with it in a sensitive manner. It means that the police service will have to look at its training and look at the sensitivity with which our members are trained to deal with fingerprint taking, because fingerprint taking is also an invasive act. So therefore, we need to be aware of that, we need to take that on board, and need to train our members to be sensitive in the manner in which they do that. We accept that. Madam Chair, we take note of that. The body prints, well, similar principles will apply with regard to body prints and to fingerprints. If you do not take fingerprint sensitively, then you will have the same problem if you don't take a palm print or a footprint or any other print in a sensitive manner. And therefore, our members should be receiving training in this regard. And I can assure you the department has taken note of it and will definitely do something about it. We are already looking at our training in this regard. Madam Chair, yes, I must tell you, it was extremely difficult to decipher it. You can see how vague it is. So that's the part that I did not pick up. Perhaps my reading was not fine. But I will check that again and try and find a copy which is more clearer so that I can read it properly and then address it later on with your permission.
An original copy, but the opening line does say that all society objects absolutely to the taking of non-intimate samples of certain sectors. So they obviously have big problems with this. I think we need to have a fresh copy of this quite quickly. Follow an original. Thank you, David. Yeah.
Madam Chair, if I may carry on. The next important submission that we received was from the Centre for Constitutional Rights, and they raised a number of issues. The first issue was, but that's already been discussed, that a finger prick, a blood sample, and a buccal swab should actually be regarded as an intimate sample and not as a non-intimate sample. Now, Madam Chair, as far as this is concerned, I think the committee needs to take note of the consequences of taking a decision of this nature. If a buccal swab, for instance, and a fingerprint prick has to be taken by a medical or health practitioner, then we must realize that it means that our police, especially in the outlying areas, must, on a 24-hour basis, have access to a person qualified in this respect to take this kind of sample, because these samples must be taken upon arrest. So it becomes extremely difficult. We believe, ma'am, that if I may refer to the finger prick test, the finger prick is an apparatus that was developed and that the police is at the moment testing in order to determine its effectiveness. And if I may explain it to you, it is rather difficult because I don't have one of those apparatus here to explain it to you, but if I may demonstrate it to the members of the committee, it is something, a small box type of thing where you insert your finger and then there's a small button at the top which is then pressed and it automatically injects a needle into your finger and it is in a matter of milliseconds. It goes in and out and you get a very small drop of blood which is then stored in that container. So you can then remove your finger and you will most probably not even notice.
In my slow learning, I'm not sure. I thought we agreed when you made your opening remarks that we are going to concentrate on fingerprints, on photos, something that those 10 things. And I think now when we talk with Bagelswap, finger pricking, I think it's more biological, which is part of DNA, which in your opening remarks you indicated that you are not going to deal with that. So I'm a little bit lost. But are we frog jumping now? So that's where my computer comes.
I'm sorry. As much as the gentleman would like to convince us that it'll all be very easy and simple, in this day of HIV and AIDS, number one, only a medical professional can assure an individual that that has not been used previously, that it is free of any contamination, that, you know, it is an invasive procedure. No matter how simply put it is the taking of blood. And you can't say, well, the taking of blood in an arm is more invasive than the taking of blood from a finger. It'll never, ever get passed anywhere. I think your initial ruling that the swabs and the taking of blood from a finger must be put under intimate samples, not dealt with in this section, and can be thoroughly dealt with in a latter part if there should be one. But to suggest that any police person is qualified to do this, then I mean, I'm very concerned that it should be a problem to have some medical personnel available 24/7 because what happens if a rape woman comes in? Do they now not get attention? I find that quite a bizarre statement to make because if we don't have medical practitioners available to our police stations around the country 24/7, then no wonder we have such a crisis when it comes to women reporting rape. So, I think we would stick absolutely with the first ruling that these two are put under intimate and it is not dealt with in what we're looking at here today.
Yes, I agree that that's the decision we took and that's why we dealing with the bill in this way. But I think whatever we do is that we make sure before we have to be careful also to move it now to intimate, because we don't want to create problems around the current legislation as it stands. As I understand it, the status quo in terms of that remains, the way it's been treated, and we basically don't have to listen or look at those issues today, but we can just focus on the body prints, fingerprints, and the photographs, if I understood you correctly, and the rest of it then we will deal with when we deal with the DNA. And then we will take a decision around what do we do with swabs and with fingerprint prick.
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to suggest that I think what we requested that this gentleman, as you are doing, he gives the submission, he gives the police view, and then instead of arguing with them, as long as that door are, we know what their view, we might not agree with it. Then we leave it for a later stage. That is all in my mind I was requesting. For instance, even on the ethical issue, this gentleman says it's there in the act as it stands now. But my view is that still,
does not mean that we cannot discuss it now that we are dealing with the law. But that is why I did not ask it, and that all what we are interested in, what is the submission, what is the view of the police? Of course, once they finish, we can ask some questions, and then on our side, we still discuss whether we agree with them or not.
Actually, just very quickly, can I just ask that once the presentation has been done, that the same, the responses that have been given, the views of the police that are being conveyed, can you ask that be put in writing to the committee? And one of the reasons why I'm saying is because the president is also telling us we only got this last night. So one would want that in writing. All the views of the police, the comments that are being made,
Madam Chair, no problem. We will do exactly. But we will require a little bit of time in order to prepare the documentation and have the time. But we will most definitely do. And we'll start looking this week. Madam Chair, then once again they raise the issue of the speculative search, and as I've already referred to, that was also the Gun Association, and we are in agreement that the term speculative search is actually creating misperceptions, so we will support the changes that I've recommended. Then they query the reference to any court, because they say any court before which proceedings are pending or any court convicting a person. They wanted us to give a definition of the word any court. Now,
I think on the speculative search, they are also referring to the definition to say it is related to the detection of crime. And they're actually saying, they're suggesting that you must say directly related. I don't know whether you see that.
Yes, madam, but that's an issue that actually comes up a little bit later, but let me just explain that issue since you've just raised it. You see, the one aspect which is not provided for in the bill as far as fingerprinting is concerned at the moment is the whole issue of the use of fingerprints to identify missing persons and the use of fingerprints to identify unidentified human remains. So as far as we are concerned, it should not only relate to the detection of crime or the prosecution of offenders. There are instances where we acquire these barrels in order to determine whether somebody, a body that we find and nobody can identify, we should be in a position to identify the body and inform the next of kin of the person that has died that it was actually that person. So we would like to extend that reference. And not only, but it's something, this aspect continuously comes up in the bill, and it is every time the three aspects that are referred to, and we would prefer to have two other aspects added, namely the identification of unidentified human remains, and secondly the identification of missing.
Is on related to or directly related to. Whether you're going to add this other aspect, but it talks to related to or directly related to. They are arguing that it hasn't related to, it's too broad. It allows for anything, but it hasn't directly related to crime, related to blah, 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 missing persons, then it's focused.
You are perfectly correct, Madam Chair. The fact of the matter is that the only reason why I raise it is because if we change the circumstances, the purposes for which the search may be conducted, then we already address that issue of directly related. And we have no problem to bring in the directly related. In other words, what we are saying is we support the reference to directly related, provided we bring in the other aspects. Then, Madam Chair, the reference to any court, they believe that there should be a definition of any court. Now, Madam Chair, I, from the side of the police service, this is actually a matter that that justice can pronounce himself on. I believe that there is no misunderstanding as to what a court is and whether it's a magistrate's court, a regional court, a supreme court, a constitutional court, whatever. Everybody knows exactly what that is. So I don't think there is, we do not believe that it is necessary to put in a definition of that. There is also a reference in that submission concerning the quality of a fingerprint. In other words, if a fingerprint was not of a sufficient quality in order to take it up into the database, and we believe this is a matter that should be addressed by means of training. And I have already alluded to the fact that we will address the training issue quite definitely.
Regarding the ME court, they are referring to 36A1 case. I couldn't find the case in the BFC.
Madam Chair, that must have been part of the previous bill before it was split. But I do believe that there are references to any court in this bill, but I stand to be correct. I simply assume I noticed that in this version it normally refers to a court, not any court, but that's basically exactly the same, because it's what is a court, and we believe that there is no reason to put in a definition of that. I don't think there is any misunderstanding as far as this is concerned. And then, Madam Chair, they refer to the reference to of value, but I just want, with your permission, Madam Chair, just quickly get the submission. I think if I'm correct, Madam Chair, they refer to the question of somebody must take a decision of whether it will be of value. And they question whether the taking of the sample, well, because it refers to a sample, it's probably we can leave that out because we are not dealing with samples today. That somebody must make a decision of whether it would be of value, and they prefer that decision, that discretion be exercised at a certain level where a person has the necessary responsibility and the necessary training and is in a position to actually take that decision. And then they refer to the reference to control over, which is contained in the bill, where they say a person who has control over the samples, and they suggested that what does it mean when we talk about control over? If a person steals a sample, that person is actually in control of that sample. But I must admit that I believe that is really not something that we believe is in any way important, because I do not believe that any person who has stolen a sample will then take the sample to the police to have it analyzed. So I don't think
it is actually a position, something that should be of any concern. And then they refer to something which is contained in Section 37, which is part of the present law, to say that a police official may ensure that a person, a suspect, is made available in a certain condition, position, or apparel. And then they raises all a range of number of things as to the possible interpretation of that and how much clothing a person must have on and how much clothing will be regarded as sufficient apparel, etc., etc., etc. This is a matter which is also part of the existing law, Madam Chair, and we've never received any complaints as far as this is concerned. The position is that once a police official investigates a certain case, let us say, take, for example, a robbery, and they interview the witnesses to the robbery, and the witnesses give a description of the person, and they say the person was clean-shaven. Now, 6 months later, the police arrest the suspect, and now he must appear on an identification parade, because that's where this aspect comes in, a person appearing on an identification parade. Now, if the witness is unable to identify him because he's not clean-shaven, he has in the meantime grown a moustache or whatever, or a beard, he's now grown a beard and he looks completely different, then the police may require of this person to shave himself and to appear on the stand, on the identification parade without a beard. And that's the principle. Otherwise, Madam Chair, if that is not the case, it would mean that a person can actually deceive the identifying witness and pretend to be different than he actually is, to be somebody else, and to confuse the witness who he's supposed to identify. It also means that where they say the person was wearing long trousers, and this person, during his arrest or at the time of his arrest, wears short trousers. That's what they are raising. But I mean, this is a matter that where the member of the public must appear on the parade and then make a decision whether he or she recognizes the person and point out the person. So it's for the purposes of pointing out and to say this person is actually the one that we are looking for. So we do not agree.
I think they are also raising the issue of the same-sex officer.
Yes.
Say one, I'm just checking here on the bill. One clause specifies that it must be a same-sex officer, like if it is a female.
Yeah.
But this other clause is not mentioning that. It leaves it open. So it can be a man, you know.
Madam Chair, no. I was coming to that right now. What they are saying is the following. There is a provision in the bill saying that a police officer may not do certain things if the suspect is a female person and the police officer is a male person. And what they are simply saying is that this should apply both ways. In other words, irrespective of the male the gender of the suspect, the police officer must be of the same gender. Otherwise, you will have a situation where a male person may then be dealt with by a female police officer. They perhaps won't mind, but... it's most probably for the protection of the police officer. Thank you. Madam Chair, then the next presentation that I would like to deal with quickly is the presentation by Popkroeg. Now, Madam Chair, their biggest concern is that this legislation is drafted in a manner that will, that actually indicates to them that the purpose of...
This presentation also talks to section 37.1c about children's rights. On page 10 of the presentation, just above at clause 37.2, just that small paragraph. It talks to, they are raising issues regarding children's rights and how they are covered in the bill. I don't know whether you've seen that, but I take the fact that you said you received this yesterday. But they do raise issues regarding the rights of children as covered in the Constitution as well as blah, blah, blah. I just want to draw your attention to that if you have not looked at it.
Madam Chair, yes, I must admit I did not pick that up. It says here that a child could be kept separately. No. Is that the clause that you are referring to, paragraph 14 on page 10, above paragraph 15, or is it below paragraph 15?
We can proceed if you've not had time to look at it and come back later.
Thank you, ma'am. I will check that and come back later. The next submission, Madam Chair, that I would like to deal with is the submission by Pop Crew. Now, if one reads it very carefully, it is clear that they are basically raising certain issues. First of all, the issue of outsourcing and the suspicion that they have that this bill was actually drafted in such a fashion in order to create the possibility of outsourcing. And the second issue they raised was that, this bill or comment that they made was that this bill should actually make provision that everything must be done by the state, by more specifically the Forensic Science Laboratory, and that the necessary people should be trained and they should receive proper compensation to ensure that they are not bought by private institutions and that they will remain in the state and perform their functions and their work. Now, Madam Chair, I can assure you that outsourcing was never on the mind of the police at the time of the drafting of this legislation when we participated in the drafting of this legislation. However, it is a matter that I think is important that we bring it to the attention of the committee that one of the possibilities will be, especially initially when we deal with DNA, not with fingerprints, with DNA, that there is a possibility that we will consider the necessity of making use of private institutions to perform certain DNA tests in order to enable us to put the information on the database. But we are not dealing with DNA today. I'm simply referring because they do not specifically deal with fingerprinting. They deal with training and the outsourcing aspect. So that is not the intention, although it would not be excluded, especially in the initial stages. So in your implementation plan, we are looking at that possibility, especially initially to deal with a backlog. But there will be very, very strict controls put in place, standards laid down in order to ensure and laboratories will be graded and vetted before we will allow any laboratory to perform functions of this nature. The next issue they refer to is obviously again the training issue, and we agree with them, and they say that our members must receive proper training. And they say that people should be empowered to actually progress in their careers by receiving proper training and by being enabled to receive proper training, and therefore advance their career and advance their own skills or improve their own skills. We are obviously in agreement with that, that this should be the case. And I must also tell you, and you would have seen, Madam Chair, with the attempted presentation on the implementation of the bill, reference was already made to the need for training, that we realized that training should take place, and how important we regard the training itself. Because even as far as the fingerprinting is concerned, as you referred to earlier on, especially as far as the sensitivity aspect is concerned and dealing with the matter properly, we believe that training is absolutely essential. I must admit that by this time, after having gone through all the very technical documentation, I realize that unless I prepare myself on the views of the police on the bill, I will not be able to reach the committee this morning. So I was unable to deal with the rest of the submissions during the course of last night. So Madam Chair, with your permission, if I am allowed an hour or so, I will be able to make presentations on that. Or else, Madam Chair, but I'm in your hands, if you believe that I should continue to explain what the position of the police is regarding certain of these issues that are contained in the bill, I would gladly do so, but I'm in your hands, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. From our side, we are also in the hands of the committee with regard to the deliberations and the outcome of the deliberations. But with regard to the issues, with regard to definitions and with the drafting, of course, we will assist the committee with regard to certain issues, especially with regard to the issue of speculative searches, for example. With regard to the term, it's in fact defined in the bill throughout, especially with regard to the Criminal Procedure Act amendment, as well as the Firearms Control Act, the amendments there too. So, from an interpretation point of view, the definition has been term has been defined, and the use of the term is then, of course, very clear in the bill from our side. But should the committee feel that we should have a relook at this at the term, and we can do that, and we can come up with proposals for the committee as far as that is concerned. And with regard to the issue of the use of related to and directly related to, I think the bill, even as redrafted, those purposes have been clearly set out in the bill with regard to detection, investigation of an offence or the conduct of a prosecution. So we have linked the searches or the use of information, whether it's fingerprints or body prints, to that particular purpose. So if the committee feels that we should relook at the purpose for the why the use of fingerprints should be contained in the bill, we can also look at proposals to come back to the committee with that as well. Yeah, that is more or less what we've picked up from our side in respect of the submissions which we received. And of course, the debate with regard to the what should be included in intimate samples and non-intimate samples, once again, we're in the hands of the committee with regard to the extent of what we have before us. And what we have prepared is basically the redraft in the splitting of the bill with regard to the phases as indicated by the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chair. I say this with greatest respect. I do not want to waste the committee's time. Our experience has always been that it's difficult for members to follow our verbal comments on what these people are putting before the committee. We prefer putting a response to the issues, to the relevant issues, in writing from the department side, so that you can have something to read and ponder upon. And in this instance, those people that will be doing the presentation on Wednesday, they are really the people that I am feeding all these comments to and say, you please prepare also what your responses are to this. So if the committee approves, I would suggest that we go that route and actually prepare a formal response so that you can read the department says.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that's exactly what Mr. Lang is saying, because it is very difficult to follow the comments. But if there is something in writing, then you are able to tie them down every now and then of what has been said. Because the comment, the person can say that I've changed my mind, and you can't do anything. You can't shoot the person when he's changed his mind. You see, that's a problem. Therefore, when the thing is in writing, then you can... No. Please, Chairperson, can you protect me from these three members? One, two, three. They are giving me a lot of problems. I don't know, because I'm the young one out of this before this one. Now, what I'm trying to emphasize, Chairperson, what Mr. Dillon is saying is true. Because if as we're trying to follow what Hernandez was doing, we're scrambling with papers every now and then. But if everything is in written form, although we don't know English, but we can follow. We understand what is going on. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to say that we should allow Dr. Haldanis and his company to do what they want to go and do. But I'm just worried, Madam Chair. You know, they come from Pretoria. And I believe that he says he got the document last night. I'm still wondering in my head, why did he not tell the committee that I don't have the document up to now? And even if I get it, I will not be able to finish it. Can I plead with you, Madam Chair? You see, with us, we're already here in Parliament, so there would have no cost. But they come all the way from Pretoria to tell us what they could have done over the telephone at the time when the money is scarce. There's no money in the country. I'm just pleading with them because now, and I look at the areas which they have not dealt with. It's NPA, it's the human rights. Those are the very ones we want to hear what are they saying. But I don't want us to make a big, because at least I don't believe there's anything called lost time. At least the hour we're here, at least we managed to get something. But I'm just appealing them for the future. If they are not ready, I know the Chairperson is strong and very harsh on them, but surely he would not be so unreasonable if Dr. Haldane say, we have not received the document so far, and we will not, even if we get it this afternoon, we might not be able to process it before tomorrow. Can you please? And if they can, we can go to, leave it to us, go and pray to the Chairperson, kneel in, you know, and say, please, let them finish the document. I'm just making an appeal, Madam Chair. I'm not for now, not for the future, but I'm hoping, again, it's not going to be said that we chased them away, because we did do some work. They were not chased away. It's just that I'm just appealing for the future.
I think that is important. I wanted to check if the researcher can take us through their document that is here before us on the work that they have covered, because there is a document that is before us. We thought the legal people are going to do it for us, but we have a document here.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can do that. Quickly, I haven't prepared for it because I wasn't told that that was going to happen, but we can go through the document. I did actually also want to comment. Do the members have this? It's a four-page summary.
No, we don't.
You do have it. No, you see, can I just alert members, please? No, you don't have it. The packet was distributed. The packet was distributed to the members. Has got a summary that the research unit did in January from the ad hoc committee submissions. That's an 11-page summary, I think. It looks like this, like a table. But there is a summary of the new submissions as well. And that has been distributed, and I hope Jeremy will distribute that to you in the course of this meeting, so that you've got that. I wanted to just tell you, I also got the submissions not late last night, but I had yesterday to look at them, and I did read them all, the ones that I hope I received them all. POCRU was not on my list that I got. And to say that what I did was really only take out and put in the summary the issues that related specifically to the split bowl. So a lot of the comments that were made, as Ms. Hovner said, are related to the DNA stuff and stuff that's been removed from this bowl, and I haven't included that in. And also haven't included it in when there were amendments that were made that were addressed. For example, a lot of people made comments about police officers shouldn't take intimate samples, but that is, or non-intimate samples, but that's actually addressed in the new version. So that stuff's also been taken out. So that's why this, it doesn't cover everything that's in the submissions, but there's a reason for the stuff that is excluded. And, actually, a lot of the stuff has been covered in this previous presentation, because a lot of the presentations had absolutely no relevance to the split bowl, which is why they're not included. So don't think that because they're not reflected all in this summary that they weren't looked at. I looked at all the submissions, but where they were of absolutely no relevance. For example, the DNA Project did a huge submission, but they really did not focus on that. So they're not included, but we obviously need to look at their submissions at a later stage. Unfortunately, it was jumping around and stuff with, we didn't look, I think, at the Office of the National Director of Public Prosecutions. I can just tell you just two real amendment suggestions there. One was to, in 36A1A, to amend, and this is just really like a semantic thing, amend authorized person definition to add the word with. So authorized person means with reference to rather than in reference to or whatever. Dealt with the Center for Constitutional Rights submission. So I'm not going to cover that one. There was a submission by someone, Anthony Cooper, who looked at 36A1C and D, which dealt with the definitions of intimate and non-intimate samples, and basically it's the exception the chairperson has already raised that we need to really look at these different definitions. His argument was really that an intimate sample, a non-intimate sample should deal with specific things, and then your intimate sample must say and any other stuff. You know what I mean? So that you can include everything that's left out from your non-intimate sample in your intimate sample definition. The DNA Project, I didn't write this all out, but I think it'll be useful for members to read the DNA Project appendix. They put in two submissions. One is a submission from the project, and the other one, I'm not sure actually where it comes from, and I've got a feeling it comes from this task team work or something that was done, which looks at, it's entitled Fingerprint Integration. And there's a discussion there on implementation issues regarding harnessing natives and the SACS requirements. And I think that it's quite long, and I didn't have time to write the whole thing and summarize it. But pages 6 and 7 of that document are actually quite useful to read. The Center for Constitutional Rights. South African Gun Owners Association did a submission, basically also looking at speculative searching, and they were just suggesting that the term speculative search gets replaced with database search or a speculative database search. Then another, I'm sorry, I'm not going in order of submissions, I'm going in order of sections and clauses. The Office of the National Director also commented on Section 36B1A4. Basically, it refers to if a non-intimate sample was not taken upon with... there actually seems, I agree with this, there seems to be a mistake or something. In this section, it talks about the police can take a fingerprint if a non-intimate sample wasn't taken in arrest. And I think two people have actually commented on the fact that surely that should read if a fingerprint wasn't taken in arrest. Because why must you take a fingerprint unless, but anyway, that's what the submission said, so maybe just need clarity on that. Then these two comments are also from the Center of Constitutional Rights. The Law Society can't remember reported on the Law Society one. They object to the taking of body prints. Oh, I think you did, and the chairperson alluded to this. So not only by police officials. Medical rights you did. And then the last one, which was of some relevance, was the comment by the National Council of Women of South Africa, who were basically talking about the fact that the databases that are in existence, like HARNESS and eNATIS, may have incorrect information on them. And so we need to just be aware of that and look at it in terms of integration of the databases issue about what do you do, you know, because there may be incorrect information filed on those databases. So, Chairperson, that is the summary. And like I say, it would be useful to read through some of them, but what I have done here is picked up those issues that are of specific relevance to the bill that is in front of us at the moment. And, Chairperson, while I'm abusing my platform, I just wanted to know, are we going to go through the submissions that were made to the ad hoc committee that are still of relevance to this bill? I can quickly go through that now if you want to, and everybody does have those. I just made little asterisks, so maybe on your copy you can highlight those that I think are still of relevance to the bulk, to this current split bill. And that is this document dated the 2nd of February, the summary dated the 2nd of February. No, that one I just looked at. That's the 5th of November, so that's the stuff, the new submission. The submissions for the ad hoc committee are in your pack. The summary of that is in a pack, yes. We can quickly go through that. On page one, there was nothing that I... these are the kind of general issues, and most of the general issues that were dealt with last year in the ad hoc committee dealt with constitutionality issues, and a lot of them related specifically to DNA. It's worth reading the whole summary, I think, to get a sense, but I'm not going to pick up on those general issues because we're not supposed to be dealing with them now. On page 5 of that document, under general, there's an input by, is a fabric, I can't remember what that stands for. Basically, they were saying it's at the bottom there, general, it says that they recommend that a provision is included to address resistance by any of the mentioned persons to having samples of the prints taken. So in our cases, to having prints taken for this bill. So you can just put a tick by there that is still of relevance. Okay, then if you look at page 6, the Cape Bar Council looked at 36A, and basically just made the comment that it was illogical to commence Chapter 3 of the CBA with Clause 36A. So that is of relevance. I don't know if it's correct, but it's of relevance. Then the next one, also the National Prosecuting Authority looked at 36A and said that the definition of body prints is unnecessarily restrictive because it's limited to prints of a person's ear, foot, nose, palm, or toes and excludes prints that might otherwise be valuable, for example, lips. We did have some discussion of that in the ad hoc committee. I can't remember the conclusion, but that is of still relevance. And they would then recommend that body prints include or any other part of the body. The definition includes that. Then on page 7, at the top, it's also part of the NPA submission. Oh no, this one was addressed. And then this next comment that they made, 36B1A4, is in their new submission now, so that's also already been addressed. Fabric. Okay, they recommended in terms of 36B that in order to show compliance, a provision similar to that contained in the Domestic Violence Act is inserted. So I think here, and again, sorry, I haven't gone through this topic to prepare for this. I think what they're saying is, say someone, a police officer doesn't take a fingerprint of every arrested person, you should have a provision here, like in the Domestic Violence Act, which says failure by a member to comply is a problem, et cetera, et cetera. You can read that. And I think that obviously the legal people here can speak to the fact that this is a current legislation. So I don't know if you want to amend it, the comment is related to that. 36B1 recommends that they amend the definition of police official in Section 1 of the CPA. 36B1A4 is the issue about the error that's been highlighted before about the non-internet versus the fingerprint. The Cape Bar Council, I'm not sure about that issue. Maybe a legal person can talk about it. They say that 36B1A125 goes no further than the existing Section 37, except to make the taking of fingerprints compulsory. And they would therefore recommend we rather amend the existing Section 37 to make the taking of fingerprints compulsory rather than to introduce a separate section. Okay, that's all on that page. On page 8, SABREC made a comment there. It's under 36B3. They recommend that you insert a C there to account for fingerprints that are lost, misfiled, or not successfully stored, and make that an offence as well, I think. 36B6 recommend to insert a provision around any person who tampers with or manipulates or changes fingerprints, etc., can be liable for offence of 15 years or 15 years. The NPA looked at the consistency of words. They had some comment at the bottom of that page, 36B7. They talk about the fact that the words crime and offence are used interchangeably and that the bill should decide whether it talks about crimes or offences. On page 9, 37, for section 37, the NPA comments that the bill incorrectly deletes the words fingerprints from the original section when it deletes palm prints or footprints. I saw that has still been deleted, and maybe the department can say whether that's correct or not. And they recommend that the reference to fingerprints is not deleted and the word or is inserted. The Cape Bar Council, 37.1, still reads any police official may, which seems to contradict clause 36B1, which makes the taking of fingerprints and non-entry samples. SABREC, by only referring to, also talks on 37.1A, by only referring to body prints, fingerprints are, in terms of the definition of body prints, excluded. top of page 10, 37.1C, this is the same comment that, and the comment that Carl Nate made now. SABREC made the issue that only a male officer can examine a female or a female accused. A male and a male and a female, you know what I mean. Then SABREC, 37.1D made a suggestion here, something about photographic images, also related to males, the same issues mentioned above. 37.2A, SABREC, states that the provision is too demanding and lends itself to abuse, and that recommends that it's changed to say any registered medical practitioner or registered nurse may rather than must. This is the requirement providing, I think, for medical people to take samples, and it's saying some discretion must be given. It's linked to a comment that was made, and I'm not sure if it's how the nurse described it, also in one of the submissions made now. Business Against Crime, Amendment to 37.3, states that it should give medical practitioners the right to take intimate samples of children admitted to hospital with medical attention who are suspiciously victims. Then the NPA on 376A again spoke about the issues of the terminology issue, crimes. They suggest the word crime is replaced with offense. Okay, South African Human Rights Commission, regarding section 2252, suggests that the whole section should be removed. And that's the chairperson that I could pick up from the submissions that were made to the ad hoc committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nadia. I just like to ask two questions to Honorable Held, I mean to Mr. Helder. Non-intimate samples, why are they taken?
Madam Chair, the original idea was to distinguish between intimate and non-intimate samples simply for one reason, and that is to ensure that intimate samples may only be taken by a medical practitioner and non-intimate samples by a police official. Now, a non-intimate sample and an intimate sample are both taken for the purposes of DNA analysis. So that's the only reason why samples are taken.
If you're taking a hair, you're taking whatever. If you're taking your buccal swab, you're taking a blood prick. All that will be used for DNA purposes. So it shouldn't be our problem now.
Not now, madam. But the problem is that at the moment, the Criminal Procedure Act, the sections that we are amending, are already in the present law dealing with blood samples. So it will appear in this bill before the committee, the reference to blood samples. And as they referred to blood samples, the idea was to replace that with an intimate or non-intimate sample. That was the only reason. But the state law advisors can explain further the reason why they decided to retain the sample.
Thank you, Jay. The splitting of the bill, seeing that we dealt with the phase one approach and slipped off the drafting of the bill, and the definition of intimate and non-intimate sample related to the DNA issue as well, but because the references to the DNA part of the bill was removed from the bill, we were left with the taking of non-intimate samples, and we've retained that since the bill still provided for, at the moment, still the use of non-intimate samples as such. But on that basis, we've retained that provision there, and we've in order to protect whoever suspected or who was subjected to the taking of non-intimate samples or intimate samples, we provided the protection that should only be taken by a medical practitioner or registered nurse. So we've retained the status quo with regard to the blood sample, and also as far as for investigation purposes, in the parameters of the bill as it is now before the committee, we have retained the definition of non-intimate samples. So the use thereof and how it's taken can only be taken as the Jesus proposed in the bill as it stands now. Thank you.
I don't know whether there's anybody who wants to ask a question. Honorable George.
Madam, I was not going to, Madam Chair, I was not going to ask a question. But I was going to make a plea, because I listened to Dr. Khalidi when also look at the recommendations. Most of them, they emphasize one point, that one, the police must be trained. And he kept on saying, we agree. I hope next time when he comes to make a presentation, he's going to at least tell us
how long is this training going to take, please? And how much is it going to cost? Because to me, that's important for us to know whether the bail will, when we pass the bail, because it should not help us, Madam Chair, to pass the bail in January. And if that training police, if the training is going to take a year, and find out that he does not even have the money to train them. So I was just saying, probably next time, because he has repeated in all his that we agree police will need training, just to tell us how long is the training going to take and how much it will cost, if it will cost them whatever, is there money for that to be done, so that we know what. I'm just saying, not for now, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can respond to that right now. The fact of the matter is police officials are presently trained to take fingerprints and other body prints. So that training is fine. It's not a problem. The reason why I said we agree that the police require further training is the fact that it appears that there is insufficient sensitivity on the part of police officials when they take fingerprints and other body prints. So therefore we said we need to address that in our training. But it does not mean that we will design new training courses to take fingerprints. Most definitely not. All our members have received training and all our members have completed their training successfully and are doing it. However, what we are saying is we will sensitize our members, and that's not going to cost money. It is simply changes to the contents of the training that we already present and that are already provided for in our basic training module, because that's where a police official learns how to take a fingerprint or a body print. So that's the only thing, it's the sensitivity aspect that we will address. But it is simply by amending the training, not by developing new training courses and presenting it to existing members. Because with 180,000 members, Madam Chair, if we have to come here and to say that we want to train 180,000 members, you can imagine how long that is going to take and what the cost of that would be. So that's all we say, is that we will amend our training material, we will sensitize our members, and we will build it in all refresher courses, so that when a member goes on a detective course, they will once again bring it to his attention. When you take fingerprints, deal with it in this fashion. You already know how to do it, but remember to be sensitive. Remember to acknowledge the dignity and whatever, the privacy of the person. And that's the only thing that I said.
That's a question which might sound a bit strange, but this contention that we should actually expand the definition of body print. I mean, where does it end then? That could really be of use if people want to be funny about it. I mean, should we not limit it to certain types of body prints?
Madam Chair, yes, I understand. I fully understand, and I grappled at the police with this whole issue. But let me give you examples of body prints of cases in which I was personally involved in the investigation. The one was an instance where a person left the prints of his lips on a mirror, and we were actually eventually able to identify the person because of a scar on one of his lips, which clearly came out from the print on the mirror. Now, I don't want to go into the detail of why the person made the print on the mirror that we found on the crime scene. That's not the point. The point is that is something that happened. I have personally been involved in a housebreaking case where we eventually arrested the person, and he was eventually linked to the crime based on his knee, a print of his knee that he left on a wall when he climbed over to get into the premises where he committed the housebreak. And once again, it was very interesting. It's not because of the peculiar pattern of a knee, but because of a simple scar on the knee, which matched exactly the scar on the knee of that person. So we took a print of his knee, compared it to the print that we found at the scene of the crime, and they were identical. And the interesting part of it, and that's the importance of this kind of evidence, Madam Chair, the interesting part of it is the moment we confronted him with a print that we found on the scene and the one that we took from him, he confessed to the crime. Because he realized that there's no way that he can argue that it's not him. The same applies to an elbow, the print of an elbow. Now the question is, what part of the elbow? This part or that part? And the difficulty that I understand the committee will be faced is how to limit it. Because you want to say that you should not be able to have a person undress himself and then take prints of parts which are normally closed. I understand that. But we need to find some sort of middle ground where we say that these types of prints that I've just been referring to are included. And the ones that are specifically excluded by this bill that we would like to have included is number one, lips, knees, and specifically elbows. So I don't know whether there could be others that we may from time to time find. Like, for instance, the front head, I don't know. But the moment when you limit it to only those, it means the rest are excluded, totally excluded. And I would prefer to have a situation where we prohibit the taking of prints from certain body parts and leave the rest open, because it becomes impossible to determine what kind of prints you may find.
I'm not sure if it's covered by the bill already, but then, I mean, it specifies something like that, it must be directly related to some evidence that has already been found by the police. Something like that.
Okay. Thank you very much. We surely will be engaging with this. We therefore are saying we have this summary, which we received from the researcher, of the submissions that are before us, and the department is again going to look into other aspects. The name that we not touch, I can tell you this. What is this? Yeah, Center for Constitutional Rights. Their submission is very detailed. Close for close, and I think it will be important that you look into that as well. We will therefore get a document from the department you promised us, Mr. Sheldon, and as well as that, that talks to all these submissions and your views on them on Wednesday. I think I will agree. We have postponed meeting out of the request of the department when it feels that it's not ready. It really can be done, because it is frustrating sometimes when you come to a meeting and everybody is not ready. You can inform us that, yes, we'd like to come, but we think we're not ready. So that we then decide knowingly that the department is not ready, whether to force the department to come or to postpone the meeting we have, and the past postpone meetings out of such effect. So it cannot really be a problem, because it's not just about the meeting, but it's about the assessment from all of us to engage in the meeting and be able to take decisions out of that or benefit out of meetings. So that one is definitely not a problem. But let me, at this stage, I think it's going to happen. Let me decide that maybe we can move towards closing the meeting unless somebody wants to say something.
Madam Chair, in addition to the comments, comments from the police side on the submissions that the committee received, we have certain comments that we about the wording of the bill which are not addressed in the submission. In other words, it is matters that we want to raise as the police service concerning the wording of the bill. Now, I do not know whether you want me to proceed with that, because I am prepared for that. Okay, Madam Chair, if we look at Section 36A, which is Clause 2 of the bill, you will see the definition of authorized person. Now, whilst we agree with that comment that it should be authorized person, which means with reference to, and then the rest, in other words, not in reference to, but with reference to, there's another issue. The previous version of the bill, in other words, before it was split chambers, paragraph Roman numeral 2 referred to the NDDSA. In other words, that was the National Database for DNA Evidence. And therefore, the need existed for subparagraph 2. However, because this bill does not address DNA at all, it is only one, Roman numeral 1 under paragraph A, which is necessary. And therefore, the two can be collapsed. The introductory part and paragraph A can be collapsed. In other words, it should be reading authorized person means with reference to a photographic images, fingerprints or body prints, any police official in the performance of his or her official duties.
Chair, I really think if we may ask to have your suggested alteration all the way through, give it to us in a document. We've got any number now of suggested alterations to this bill. We do have a summary of the submissions, applications, and we need to go through line by line and also take in possible changes from the SAPS perspective. But we do have suggested alterations by many people. So I think in order to move forward in an organized fashion, we need it all in writing. Please put down every change you think and why, and then we can put them all in a row and go through it very carefully line by line. But I think just hearing them now, very difficult to relate to whether we should or shouldn't. We have to debate every single point. All right. Sorry, that's just my suggestion.
No, I think that is not. I just wanted to hear what Mr. Henry was going to say in his introduction, because I was of the view that the bill was drafted by themselves and not much has been done. Department of Police was involved in the drafting of the initial bill. And one would have thought that the splitting of the bill has not changed much of the content. I just wanted to understand you just on that, and that is why I said maybe go ahead. And I think, Honorable Kolabanat is correct, just from what you have said in your introduction. I think we therefore on Tuesday, on Wednesday, going to have yourself presenting this, but also the implementation plan, a finalized implementation plan as we proceed with ourselves, together with the justice is going to present that or whatever, and then we take it from there. Let me, at this stage.
Chair, I was going to ask, there's going to be a whole lot of presentations on Wednesday. Can we get these documents before them? We can really appeal for this. If we get all of these documents, they're in logical order. I want to be honest, Chairperson. Even with this pack here, I don't even know where they're referring to half the time. And I really want to appeal that we get these presentations, we get them in a pack in order, so we know what we're following. It's very difficult to follow this stuff. Some of the stuff we only received today. So it's very, very difficult. I can understand why then other people are saying not prepared because they got it yesterday. We only got this today, some of it. And it's difficult for us to follow. That would be my preacher.
Yeah, no, I think that goes to our
admin. No, there aren't any meetings on Monday or Tuesday now. We're only going to meet on Wednesday.
Definitely, there won't be any meetings on Monday. There is a meeting on Wednesday, not on Monday. on Tuesday, we I'm just going to inform you about this invitation from the Deputy Speaker. At 11 o'clock, a joint committee session has been scheduled to take place on Tuesday the 10th from 11 to 12:30 in the Old Assembly Chamber. We will be addressed by the LOC, a FIFA Preparation Committee, on their readiness with regard to the FIFA World Cup next year. So we are, as a committee, invited, and that is the meeting that we're going to attend. And then on Tuesday, that is at 11, Old Assembly, as members of the Portfolio Committee were invited. And then we are meeting on Tuesday at 9 o'clock. Then will be communicated to us on Wednesday. Yes, on Wednesday. Yes, from 9 in the morning until 1. Not half past 9, not half past 8. Thank you very much, members. Let me wish you all a safe journey home and some rest over the weekend if you will for one. They are saying no. Thank you very much for listening to this attempt.